Downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
Hey, it's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. And I'm Dr. Lisa. And I give a shit. I give a shit about you. I do. You know, if you're feeling right now like no one gives a shit, well, I do. You can always get in touch with me and I'll pat you on the back or the head, wherever you... Well, anyway, thanks for tuning in today. We have a great guest here for you. I'm like getting nervous saying her name because like, I don't know. I'm just nervous, I guess. So it's Yulia Lakarova. You say it.
Yulia Larycheva, but you just call me Yulia, like the artist.
Like I normally do.
Yeah.
I got stuck trying to say your last name.
It's all right. It's a lot of syllables.
No. It's so anyway, so she's here. She's here today. And are you sick of people telling you to vote? Because you should vote. But you should vote. And I feel like anyone who's listening to this station is already going to vote. I feel like it actually makes me feel guilty. What I should be doing is being at a phone bank making calls to people who really might not vote or vote wrong, vote for the wrong person. And I just, before we get into it, I just want to remind you to take Radio Free Brooklyn with you wherever you go by downloading our free apps. RadioFreeBrooklyn.org/iPhone or /Android, depending on the device that's relevant for you. But it's a great way to get through life because we got the coolest stuff here going on. So I'm going to tell you about Yulia. Why am I doing this? It never happens when we're hanging, you know. Well, so I know Yulia from... advertising originally, right, Yulia?
Yeah, we met at a party like ages ago.
Ages ago, an advertising party, right? And Yulia is extremely, extremely talented. She's still gainfully employed and has her own business in advertising, not unlike myself who flunked out of advertising. But that's a whole other story. Never mind. So the thing about Yulia that I want to talk about with Yulia today, if I say it enough, maybe I'll get over it.
You can call me Jules. My friends call me Jules, too.
Jules, maybe. Yeah. It feels pretentious to me. You know that? It does. Not when I'm talking to you, but when I'm saying it on the air for some reason. I didn't know I was going to feel like that. That's why I feel pretentious. Again.
It's a big name.
I'm an idiot. It's okay. It's okay. We're laughing. It's fun. We're having fun already. I can tell. So anyway, so here's the thing about Yulia is that she is incredibly bright, incredibly talented, and freaking driven. Like more driven than any, like I can't think of a human that I know personally that's more driven. Like there are more driven people, but I don't know them personally.
Steve Jobs.
He's dead. He's dead, and I never met him when he was alive. I was thinking about Oprah today because I saw Oprah on endorsing.
My friend was in the elevator with her yesterday,
He
said that she was singing Hail to the Chief. She was just whistling it to herself, which is kind of like a life goal.
That's kind of cute. Yeah. But anyway, so we want to find out. I think it'd be really interesting. And one of the things about Yulia that is really that I think may give us a hint into an insight into why she is so successful and driven is that she comes originally from Russia. She grew up in outside of Moscow. She was born in 1979 and she lived there for 10 years until she moved here in 1989. And she told me that she moved here. She immigrated here because Reagan, it was.
Yeah,
right?
Reagan passed a law that permitted all the Jews to leave, and we were out. We were like, peace out, Moscow.
So I think this is so relevant at this moment in time that we're speaking to an incredibly successful and productive and generous. Julia's a great woman representative. She does a lot for women. So anyway, I think it's really fucking interesting. That's all I'm saying. And I want to make sure that we get in the name of her website, dreamnation.io. And she's got a podcast and all things Dream Nation are on there. So go there and check it out. It's got a lot of crap about her. That's really interesting.
And a bunch of other people, too. A lot of crap about other people. Yeah, lots of stuff. Lots of good stuff.
So we were going to start off by talking about your most traumatic childhood incident. Do you want to tell us?
Yes. You know, I think the first one was getting my dog getting run over in front of me. That really, like, at the age of, like, 7, that was, like, the worst thing in the whole entire world. But then...
Well, how did it happen? Tell us the story.
You know what?
If you don't mind.
I got this little dog and I named him Toto and he looked exactly like Toto. And I bought him at the market in Russia because Russia is like anything goes, right? So like there's everything being sold except for food.
You mean it's not regulated like it is here?
Right. It wasn't regulated at the time. And my mom and I were out and she thought it would be really great to buy me a puppy, which of course I loved. But he was a little spastic, you know, obviously he was probably like an abused dog, which makes sense because I totally like take care of abused things. So which is why we're friends, right? So I had him probably for a month and we're house training him and he was just very, very spastic. And my grandma and I went to fetch water because we didn't have running water. So we had to walk.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
So running water.
No running water. We had to walk with the pails, like Russian style, you know, like you see in the 1800s. Bring your own water in the winter. And this was like in the fall. And we were going to go fetch water. And I was like, I want to bring my dog. And grandma's like, no, you should leave him. And I was like, no, I want to take him for a walk. And I took him for a walk. And after we got the buckets of water, my dog just ran off the leash. He just pulled so hard that I lost control of the leash and he ran into the road.
Mm.
And I checked both ways on like 7 because my first instinct is to run after him and capture him because he's already like on the other side and he's zigzagging all over the road. And he's a puppy. He's a puppy. And I saw this car coming and I just looked at my dog and then I looked at my grandma and I looked at the car and I was like, well, I can't stay with the dog because he's going to kill me. So I was like, okay, I have to go to my grandma. So I ran to my grandma and then we just turned around and my dog just got run over, just like a huge truck.
Like splat.
Just like splat. And my grandma was like, don't look. I got this. Just stay here.
Mm.
And my grandma was so hardcore. Like my grandma was my inspiration, right? And she just literally like dragged him off the leash, like to a roadside, yelping still. And he just died because it was a splat. It was a bad splat. And I think that was probably like, I've had a really great childhood. So that was probably the most shocking part of it. Not being in control.
Did the driver stop?
He didn't. He kept on going, which was very Russian.
Oh. And how did your grandmother handle you?
Me?
Mm-hmm. Was she reassuring? Like, what's your memory of it? Like, has it traumatized you or?
You know what? She just.
I mean, does it affect you now or did you just learn something from that? Or?
I just learned something from it because I think you just learned that like, A, you have to listen to people when they tell you things like, okay, maybe you should leave the dog at home. Maybe it's not the right moment right now, right? And then I also learned that sometimes you just have to do the really hard things. Like I would not be able to go there and just push the dog into the side. That's my dog.
Right.
But my grandma was so hardcore. She was able to just like deal with that. She was able to keep me away from it. And make sure that like everything fell into place.
So that's crazy. That's like crazy positive because like instead of like having it like, you know, put some deep gash in your soul, what it did was it taught you resilience and admiration for the strength your grandmother had. So you actually wound up walking away with kind of a great life lesson, it sounds like.
I did. I mean, I love
there,
that dog.
There you go, guys.
I love that
no
dog.
No more crying, all right? Shut up. Look, there's your example right here.
I haven't had a dog since. So that's how traumatic
really?
It's been. I haven't had a pet
all right.
since. So, like,
really?
Oh, but I'm okay. working up to it. I will have a dog again.
Why don't you foster a dog from Wagytail, my friend's foster agency?
I don't even have time to like walk and feed myself right
you
now.
Don't.
But whenever my life comes into a space where I actually have a backyard and you know, that
eventually
that will happen.
You will. It's time now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's time, meaning that you don't have time for a pet. I get that.
Yeah.
So what did your parents do? Like, what was it like when you came here? What did your parents do in outside of Moscow?
So outside of Moscow, so my parents got divorced when I was two. And mm-hmm. I'm not really close with my dad. Like, we Skype, we FaceTime, whatever.
Is he in Moscow?
He's in Moscow. So he stayed. We immigrated. My mom gave him a choice to immigrate. And he was like, no, I want to stay. Because they were divorced by that time. We immigrated mm-hmm. at 7. And my mom was like, hey, do you want to immigrate with us? And he was like, no, I don't feel comfortable. I don't know anybody. I'm just going to stay with my family here. Mm-hmm. And my dad actually owns a karate studio. And he teaches kung fu and jiu-jitsu and, like, taekwondo.
That's so cool.
And he's in a polar bear club. So I think I get my driven sense from that.
Oh, and also physicality.
But I think
physical energy. This chick has so much physical energy.
Yeah, but I think now he's just retired. He's just hanging out. He might teach some private classes.
Mm-hmm.
And then my mom in Russia, she actually was the book buyer for the Russian library. So books were really important. Yeah, but then being a Jew, you have the Jew stamp on your passport. So it's really hard to get a job anywhere.
Because
you come in and it says Jew when you're applying for a job, and it's so anti-Semitic. They were like,
is it
no.
still like that?
I can't say
because
I have not been back, but it was a very anti-Semitic
That's terrible.
Country. So yeah, it's not a place where you want to be Jewish.
Horrible.
So my mom ended up actually working as a secretary for a long time, but she had a hard time finding work because we're supposed to immigrate. So once you tell the country you're immigrating, you're kind of banned even more.
Mm.
So it was really, really hard. And she worked as a secretary here and there, but we basically survived on our vegetable garden for a long time.
Wow. Like, did you live with your grandmother?
Yeah.
The three of you?
Yep.
But you say your childhood was happy. So even though were you poor?
Yeah,
considered poor?
No, pretty poor. I mean, if you're growing your own vegetables, you know, like.
Well, I don't know. Relative to Russia, relative to America, yeah. Sure. But relative to Russia, you were considered poor.
Yeah, I think so. But I think a lot of people were in the same boat as us where we were. So mm-hmm. I didn't feel poor because I didn't really want anything.
And your friends were all poor.
And my friends were all poor. Well, some friends were rich. You know, it depends. Like, somebody had a farm, somebody had this. But I never realized I was poor. I didn't realize I was mm-hmm. poor until later on, maybe like in my teenage years when I got to America. And I was like,
yeah, right.
Oh.
Where it's much more obvious.
Right.
So this is about immigration, folks. What was it like immigrating? That must have been like incredible.
It was. My uncles have been here for a very long time. My uncle actually invented the dissolving stitches years ago.
Get out.
Yeah.
Is he rich?
No, he's middle class.
Why? Didn't he get a patent on that?
No, it's not a patent. He did it for, United
company.
Surgical. Yeah.
They're rich. Okay.
But yeah, my uncle is like the classic story. He came here. He drove a cab for a very long time. He couldn't get a job. So he was the first to immigrate. And then he pulled his mother and my mom, his sister and me over.
Mm-hmm.
10 years later, and that's how we came over. And then Reagan opened the doors and we immigrated, and we spent about 6 months living in Austria, Vienna.
How come
They have to process all your paperwork. So Vienna was a destination point where you go to either Israel or you go to America. Mm-hmm.
Did you know you wanted to come to America?
Yeah, we knew. I think when we left, first we thought we were going to go to Israel. But then my mom decided she did not want me to be in the military. Thank you, Mom.
Mm.
So we ended up coming here.
Mm-hmm.
But we still have relatives in Israel.
Mm-hmm. So did you get your citizenship?
Yes,
and
I got my
citizenship. Does your mom have her citizenship?
Yeah.
But so what was that like as a small child? Like, you were, what, 10 when you came here?
Yeah, the only words I knew were, hi, my name is Julia. I went by Julia because Americans could
Plus
not pronounce
people like
my name.
Me. Exactly. I get it.
So I was like,
sensible.
I was like, I like pizza.
Where did you move to?
We moved to Connecticut, which mm-hmm. is like, totally like a 180 from Russia,
mm-hmm.
especially
yeah.
Connecticut. You know?
So what was that like for you as a child?
I was very lucky to be in a very great community.
Mm-hmm. What part of Connecticut?
Around New Haven.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a Jewish community, and there were a lot of people who were just very welcoming and, who made the transition a lot easier.
Mm.
So I had a really great school. I had a really great network. I don't think I would have been able to assimilate so well if I had not had.
And you
a
had
great
friends.
Network.
Or when you say network, you're talking about adults.
Adults. I would like to say a community of adults, right? Uncles, friends. A really great elementary school that helped me get a tutor and took in a bunch of us who were refugees.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave us this wonderful woman who was my teacher for a long time, Joan Devenning. Oh, I get choked up talking about her.
Wow.
She actually died in a bus bombing in 1995 in Israel, in the last bus bombing before they ended up building the wall. So she was this really amazing woman that was like so much fun. She taught sex ed for us. And then she just, in eighth grade, you know, we went on a sabbatical. We all went on a class trip. And after we graduated, she went on a sabbatical to Israel by herself. And she just got on the wrong bus at the wrong seat.
Mm.
And
tragedy. That's tragedy. A tragedy.
It's a tragedy. But she
made such a good contribution to the planet with you people, right?
Yeah.
All of you.
Well, with everyone. I think she was a very giving person. So I think I learned a lot from her.
Mm-hmm.
Just to be adventurous and generous and kind.
Mm-hmm.
And wow, I didn't think I was going to get so choked up. Wow, that's a lot of memories. But good, but you know, just being surrounded by really incredible people who help lift you up.
Yeah.
And give you opportunities and who are kind.
Yeah, so your mom got a job easily hard?
You know,
wasn't too hard and you learned English okay?
Yeah, we assimilated and we just started grooving. It took a while. It took about 2 years before we started speaking the language.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my mom was teaching me English when we were in Russia because it's a curriculum in the school. So she already spoke English.
Oh, good.
So she was just like feeding me words. And it took me about 2 years to be fully
Did your mom meet any guys here?
She did. She dated a bunch of Russian guys. And it was just all like, oh, it's all a hot mess.
So she's single now.
She's single, yes. My mom was going to be perpetually single.
She didn't remarry.
Single. No, she didn't. She just, you know, I think she likes the adventurous types and she just goes for the wrong men.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know,
mm-hmm.
she's very independent.
But you're close with her.
We are, unfortunately. I'm an only child. There's no
unfortunately.
Escape. There's no escape when you're an only child.
Oh, I know. But you guys have, I mean, a good rapport or?
We do. You know, we always had a really great relationship, but in the last few years, it's been very hard due to our different political beliefs. Like she's become Republican, which is really,
really
interesting. Yeah,
but that's so weird because that's anti-immigration. So what does she say? How does she?
You know, she believes that people should immigrate through the proper channels, like we did. So she's for immigration, but she thinks that like there has to be some due process that you actually go through, as opposed to just you know immigrating. But then again, it's a conversation we have over and over again.
Oh,
and I'm
so
like,
she doesn't like people just coming into the country and trying to get in here or something.
Yeah.
She wants them to go to Austria first.
Yeah, she wants process.
They should come here but go to Austria first.
Yeah, she's like, I waited 10 years to immigrate to America.
I could see. I can understand that. I don't think that I necessarily agree with it, but I can see her point.
That's, right.
It's not that she doesn't want the people here. She just wants she wants them to have to do what she had. I get that.
And it's been the most interesting point to like figure out how to connect with my mom about politics, right? Because it's different. But when you're like in your family, you're like, whoa, this is interesting. Well, how do I know this person who is very loving and I know she's loving and I know she's empathetic, but then like, how do I have her see that in the bigger frame of things? And how do I see that in the bigger frame of
things? What does she think about the rhetoric coming out of Trump?
We've had these conversations over and over again. And I think what's interesting is that she believes that it's the same thing that was happening in Russia. It's the conversation coming out of places where you're not sure where it's coming from. And usually it's like, you don't know who's doing it, right? So you don't know the truth.
Mm-hmm.
So we keep on going to these conversations where she's like, I'm not really sure what's going on.
Oh, she's so like, she doesn't trust anything.
She doesn't trust anything, right? Because we grew up in a country that was Russian and everything that we were told was completely just lies, right?
Mm.
It was complete it was complete just propaganda. So what she's having trouble with is trying to figure out the propaganda because we are Russian and we're like, wait, Russia wants to attack America. That's like, you know, there's like this such a big war and all that stuff, but like what is true? Like as a Russian, nobody wanted to attack. We're all like afraid that America was going to attack us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody on both sides. It's like who is really telling the story?
So your mother may have a different take on what the role of the news media and the government as far as being honest and truthful is.
Yeah,
coming from her background, that she may be a lot more accepting of the rhetoric because she grew up that way.
Or she just kind of doesn't let it affect her opinions, yeah. Right? She tries not to look into it because I think it's, mm-hmm. I know I get really triggered. Like I turned on the news today and I was like, oh, there's a new political ad. Oh, it's against the caravan of refugees. I'm so angry. But then I'm like, wait, calm down. Like this is exactly what the media wants me to do, right? Mm. They're instigating me and they're showing mm-hmm. me footage, but like, what is the truth? Have right. I seen this clip anywhere? No. Like, how much do I know? Like, everything, there's just so much information right now and I'm constantly wanting to react. But then I'm like, okay, what's going on? Like, okay, is Kavanaugh going to take away all my rights? Yes, he's a horrible person, but what is he doing to actually physically take away all my rights?
Right.
So it's kind of like there's all this panic going on, right? And you have mm-hmm. to like mm-hmm. stop in the middle of this tornado and go, these are all the voices. What is actually happening?
So you're from an athletic family. Were you athletic growing up?
No, I was an art kid. And I didn't have health insurance for a very long time. You know, like single mom, whatever. So I was always afraid to break something. So I never played any sports.
Oh, really?
Huh. But I'm really good at soccer and I love tennis. Mm-hmm. But I'm also an artist. So I always was really, really afraid to break my arm because that would mean I wouldn't be able to draw or write or anything mm-hmm. else.
Mm-hmm. And were you always like an A student? I picture you as an A student.
I was like a B+, A- student. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of it had to do is because I was really focused into art.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish I was really more into math and science, but it was never framed to me in a way where I could understand it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think like my whole entire life I was told I was artsy, right? Like I didn't, not until college did I realize that I was an entrepreneur, because I've been doing entrepreneurial things my whole entire life. But as a woman, you're told you're artsy right. and you're making art. But and, no, I have a business.
And you went to where did you go to school?
UMass Amherst, yeah. Not Amherst. I'm not.
University
not
of Massachusetts.
So yeah.
In the Amherst campus. But and what did you study there?
I created my own major, actually.
Of course. And what was that?
It was called Creative Socially Aware Advertising. And it was through their BDIC program, which is a really wonderful program. So I basically wrote my whole entire curriculum before I entered the college. And I told them what I was interested in and I had to get advisors. And I created my own curriculum out of the 5 college networks. So I had to look at their courses and I chose what courses I wanted. And then
this is crazy. You know this.
No, check this out. It gets crazier. I utilized internships too. So I had internship credit, cover some courses. And then get this. I launched my first magazine and tech platform senior year as my senior thesis. So before Zuckerberg was building tech platforms, my partner, Jasmine Tribelsi, who's a really brilliant woman, her husband is the CTO of Etsy. He was the CTO of Flickr. Mm-hmm. And her and I are like, we're still mm-hmm. really good friends. She lives around the corner from me. And she approached me and we're both kind of, you know, feminist and artsy. And she's like, you know, I'm building this tech platform. I kind of want to do an art magazine. And I just wrapped up an internship at Paper and she finished one at Fitness. And we came back and we were so bored senior year. She was like, do you want to do a project together and launch an art magazine? And I was like, yeah, there are not enough women artists. So we launched something that's still up. It's called artsymag.com, and we feature 365 women artists from all over the world.
Wow.
We interviewed Judy Chicago. We interviewed Yoko Ono. We've interviewed every possible woman.
What year is this?
99. Mm-hmm. So this was before Zuckerberg.
When you're in college.
When we're in college. Mm-hmm. And we got a $5,000 grant from UMass to do this.
Holy shit.
So we were doing a platform our senior year instead of going to college. We were still going to classes, but this was our main focus. Mm-hmm. And Art Forum had like a 34-page discussion on whether or not an art feminist magazine needs to be. We were a splash. We splashed
ahead of your time, like the beginning of your time.
Yeah. And then you know, now there's artsy.net, but they kind of like took our name and they just wiped out the woman aspect. But we were the first platform to sell art online for women.
Wow. So but like what's so interesting to me is like the initiative that a young person like yourself would, what did you have in mind when you put all those majors together, you know, all that stuff together to make your own major? Were you thinking What were you feeling? Like, were you thinking, like, I want to have control over my life? No one's going to tell me what to do. Or did you have a vision at the end? What were you thinking? What the hell were you thinking?
I knew I wanted to be in control of my day, what I was learning, what I was consuming, what was relevant, what wasn't relevant. Because I was like, wait, I don't want to take a bunch of accounting courses. I want to take a bunch of marketing courses. And I also, we also had Marxist economics teachers, which was amazing. And I was like, I'm going to take a few classes because that's an amazing opportunity. I'm not just an artist. I'm interested in business. I'm interested in economics.
Yeah.
And if I just signed up for a traditional art major, I wasn't going to be exposed to the business side.
Mm-hmm.
And then my main goal with my major was to create impact through advertising and storytelling, to create a social impact. I grew up listening to a lot of punk rock as a teenager. Once I got into America, you know, like there's nothing more rebellious than being a Connecticut teenager and going to punk rock shows. You know, you're just like rebelling against the system. So I grew up listening to a lot of like Youth of Today, Gorilla Biscuits, a lot of music that's super high energy and super positive. Like my favorite song is Gorilla Biscuits, Let's Start Today. You know, like for the first time in my life, won't pass me by.
There you go.
So it's all about seizing your day and doing the max, right? Like, perfect example. I just got off a conference call on my phone. As I was wrapping it up, I got into a cab and I'm here. After this, you know, I'm going to go for a workout. Like, I am like, I'm the rock.
So what is that that's driving you? What do you think? Do you think it's from what do you think it is?
I think that I'm so aware that life is so short and so many other people need to wake up and they need to be following their passion. And I want to be able to create all of these tools. And a lot of my tools comes from my voice, right? Using my voice and telling people that they can start controlling their life and really be living their dream. Because a lot of us, I think they just go, okay, well, I got to go to college. I got to go through a system, right? And then they go through a system and they're not happy. And then they go through some program that they're not even happy at. And then they go to some job that they get because they think they have to go through a program to get it. And then they end up in this boardroom with a bunch of people that they don't even like. And now they're stuck in this life. And then they're married to someone because they think there's like some time.
They just got on the train and shut their eyes. I get that.
So as a
pretend shrink, I'm going to ask you a challenge, okay? Because that's why we're here. Some shrinks would say that your busyness, or I'm going to say it's almost like a compulsion, although a very positive one, is an avoidance of something else or some feelings or a fear or something like that. Have you ever thought about that way? Have you ever been in therapy?
No.
Okay.
I'm pretty good about solving my own problems.
You couldn't sit still long enough anyway.
I would be analyzing the therapist.
No, I'm not selling therapy.
You know what?
I'm just curious if you've ever talked about this.
I have. You know what? I was in couples therapy. In my last relationship with my ex-husband, we spent 11 years
married.
Together. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a really wonderful person.
Can I ask you how long you're married or how long you're
11 years.
With him? Okay.
11 years.
And how old were you when you got married?
Oh, gosh. Well, we weren't officially married.
Did you meet him in your 20s?
Yeah, 24.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. Okay.
And he's a wonderful person. We're still friends.
Nice.
He's great. But I remember he dragged me into therapy, and I just remember I hated it. I hated being in therapy.
Why?
Because I was like, let's just go on a trip. Let's just do things together. I don't want to sit here and focus on the problems. I want to focus on the solutions. And I'm going to give you a bunch of solutions. And let's try to like bridge the gap, meet each other halfway. Give me a list of your solutions and I'll try your solutions and you try my solutions and we figure out a common ground.
And what did he say to that?
No, he just was like,
"What?"
I think he just wanted to get through to me in a different way.
Why did he want you to go into therapy? Do you remember?
You know, our
couples therapy.
It's a good question.
Not you personally. Couples therapy.
I'm actually trying to think about that. Why? It came to the point where I have a really, really stressful career in advertising.
Yeah.
So I'm working a lot. So
yeah.
A lot of that had to be impacted by work. My crazy schedule. Like I had trouble making the appointments because I would always get deadlines. So it's like I can't make a 7 o'clock. Like this is stressing me out because I have a deadline and I have to stay at work till 10 o'clock. But then like, you're messing up my career.
Mm-hmm.
So he was like, well, you're putting everything aside for your career. And I'm like, this is my career. Like, I can't choose between the two and you have to accept me for what it is. And he was expecting me to be more of a wife than of a person that I am. If you if you get me, you know I'm a workaholic, but you know I make time. So I, you know, usually on the weekends I dedicate to like hanging out. Every free second that I'm not working, I'm fully present. Yes, I'm guilty of being not fully present, as we all are, and I've been a lot better about like putting away the phone and things like that. But you can't expect a fish to climb a tree. He wanted somebody else. That's what it was in the end. And he wanted kids and a family, and I just wasn't there yet. And that's it. And sometimes
so back to what I was saying. So are there like, so do you think that, I mean, it sounds like you really focus on the positive, which is great. And it's where I'm not, you know, whatever you're doing, don't change at all, because it really works.
I'm not Lisa, never.
Don't change anything. I'm just trying to understand it, because I'm probably, you know, I mean, I'm envious, obviously. What's the magic here?
But it's, the magic is you just decide to put on a rosy pair of glasses.
Well, I think the question I'm asking is that, would somebody might say that you are burying your real feelings, that, you know, like, I mean, it's just so interesting to me, because like when you talked about what happened with your dog, you had a very positive outlook on it, which is incredible and admirable. And so is like, don't you ever get pissed off? Don't you ever feel like anything sucks?
Oh,
where's the cynicism?
You know what? I think my positivity is driven by my super deep cynicism, right? It's kind of like a Lily Allen video when she's just like running down the street and she sees like a crack pipe and she's like, ah, oh, that's magic wand, you know, because it's like, you know, shit is shit and you see shit and you know exactly what's going on. But if you let the shit be shit, it's going to eat you. Mm-hmm. It's going to win. Mm-hmm. So in order to save yourself, you have to create a space for good things to exist. Mm-hmm. And in order to save the world, mm-hmm. you have to be positive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not saying, it's not disacknowledging the negative side. Like when my dog got killed, oh my God, like that obviously is a trauma that I still carry to this day. It's horrific. But all the other traumas, they just give you a perspective and they give you like a new experience, almost like a new level in a video game. You just unlock a new emotion and you go, holy shit. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That happened and I feel that and I can acknowledge it, but I can also create a way to like move forward. Almost like, I mean, a survive victim, right? That's how you have to
do
it.
Do you think some of that is from having a, you know, not having a lot when you were a child, young child? Do you feel like that has influenced? You seem to have this sense of like a lot that you need to get done in a very short amount of time because we're only alive for however it is. And you seem to be very conscious of that. Is that true?
Yes. I want to make sure I own my time because now, I don't know when I'm going to go.
But also I'm wondering why you are, I mean, we all have to repress the thought of death constantly, and some of us, we all have our own ways of doing it, and people that say they aren't are fucking liars. But anyway, so is it, do you think you have a particularly conscious fear of death, or where do you think it's a fear of death?
No, it's not a fear of death. I'm not afraid to die, although I don't want to go through it. I probably think it's going to be like falling asleep. Like you just get a tingly sensation and it just like, I'm not afraid of the physical act of passing. I'm afraid of the legacy that I won't leave behind.
Ah,
right.
That's interesting.
So that's what I'm interested in. I'm interested in really helping people. I'm like, what can I do in my small life that can really help other people?
So you feel real urgency to help people.
I feel a huge urgency to use my time on Earth to create a better place for the next generation and basically everyone. Like I'm vegan, right? So obviously I care about the environment. I care about the planet. Like I really care about making things nicer as a creator, as an artist. That's the least
and
I can do.
So what's your idea about, I mean, there's so many, you can't do it all. So what you have a focus, obviously. What's the focus and why do you feel connected to that particular focus?
My focus has always been championing women and minorities, the underspoken class, right? Because I guess I'm a woman and I'm a minority, so that is my experience. Mm-hmm. But I also know I've been giving a lot of chances to succeed, and I would not be able to be here sitting with you. You know, like, I who knows if
yeah,
I never
you're on
immigrated.
This radio show.
I'm on this radio show, you know?
You're on Radio Free Brooklyn. By the way, I better remind people that you're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn with Dr. Lisa. It's Dr. Lisa from Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit, and I'm here with Yulia, and we're finding the magic behind how she's so motivated and fab. She's also gorgeous, by the way.
Oh, my God, no.
In case you didn't know that.
Yeah,
she is. Just, you know, sign up for a newsletter. Why don't you do that? Sign up for a newsletter, because we're probably going to have a big fucking Christmas party, and you'll be out of it if you don't sign up. So just go to our website, radiofreebrooklyn.org, and sign up. So go ahead. So do you feel have a sense of yourself as a successful woman?
I have a sense of myself being a person who's been given incredible opportunities mm-hmm. that I would like to extend upon other people. Mm-hmm. So I want to be able to use my opportunity. You know, like, I got a chance to take an elevator. It's not a golden elevator. No, it's an elevator.
What do you mean by that?
I could still be in Russia. Like, who knows what I would be doing? I would be maybe like turning tricks in the Red Square. Like, I don't know.
So do you feel lucky that you've gotten to leave Russia?
Oh, my God. Yes. I've gotten lucky so many times in my life over and over mm-hmm. and over again. And I'm not really sure how these blessings have happened to me, but they have. Mm-hmm. And it is my obligation as a human to be able to give these blessings to other people. Because
wow.
if they ended up doing the same, it would be a very, very different place. The whole world would be instead focused on usies instead of selfies. That's what I just kind of want to get out there.
Oh, that's better than...
I think so. I think, you know, like, social media and all this stuff, like, I'm looking at it and people are just so obsessed with posting pictures of, this is me, I'm here. And, like, I don't really, like, I have to do that because I'm on social media, but it doesn't make me comfortable. I'm more interested in, like, hey, here's a cool person that I'm with, and this is what they're doing. So I'm more interested in shining a spotlight on those people and
right.
using my power to shine the spotlight on those people. But
right.
it's not about me.
So, no, I understand what you're saying, but what's interesting is sort of like, so the thing about Russia actually is that you are really great. You do understand that you have opportunities that you wouldn't have, that like in some it feels random to you in some way that you have them, right? And you're grateful for them, which is such an important note for you people. Well, I'm preaching to the choir here, but that's why immigration is so important, because immigrants can come in from outside and really make something happen because they're grateful for all the shit that us assholes take for granted, you fucks. I'm speaking to myself too. That felt good.
But I'm so grateful. I wouldn't be able, like, look at Pussy Riot. I wouldn't be able to speak out against the government. I wouldn't be able to speak at all. I wouldn't be able to have a voice. Mm-hmm. If I was a woman elsewhere, you know, it's a different story. So I'm very grateful to be an American and to be able to live in such a great country and continue to make America great in my own way, mm-hmm. which is helping women and diversity mm-hmm. and immigration and helping people have a chance, have a dream.
And what kinds of things are you most focused on changing? What would you like to change? I mean, women, would you like to see where do you think from your point of view, where do you think women are, you know, being, which way are they treated the most unfairly?
So many ways, Lisa. So
I know,
many
but
ways.
Is there one
there
way
is.
In particular?
One of the biggest ways that women can affect change is through funding. And through finance and through money, because money is power. And 4 years ago, my partners and I launched a crowdfunding platform called FundDreamer. It's FundDreamer, FundDreamer. It's still operating. We're just on hiatus because our last 2 years have just been like wild. Mm-hmm. I've launched my podcast. I launched my crowdfunding, my podcast. So I've been building up different arms of it, and we've all been moving and getting divorced and getting married, and it's been wild. So the platform is still operational. So if anybody wants to crowdfund on it, fundreamer.com is up and running. We're still running campaigns. We're just not promoting anything on social media or doing any campaigns. We've helped raise over close to $2 million for over 250 campaigns all over the world in India and Romania. And we're a really great competitor to GoFundMe, because what makes us different is you get to keep all the money. We charge the donors the fee to donate, and we don't charge you. And we have all these really great features, but it's really hard to run a crowdfunding platform when you're not funded, right? So that's another thing about women and diversity getting funded, as opposed to, like, you know, you have Zuckerberg raising money. He dropped out of college and he gets like a bunch of money from Napster because he's in the white dude network. Let's just say that, right?
Right.
So I'm very passionate about helping develop women entrepreneurs and also women VCs, and also helping women regain financial power in the workplace. So finance is a huge, huge passion area I can spend a whole entire podcast talking on, because when you empower a woman, that money goes directly into the community. It goes into her family and it goes directly into her community, where necessarily if you empower men, that usually goes elsewhere.
So do you ever sleep? That's what I want to know.
I do.
Do you have any downtime, or like what's your idea of wasting time?
My idea of wasting time.
Do you feel bad when you waste time?
I don't waste time.
You never waste time.
I never
waste
time.
So how can anybody deal with being around you 24/7?
Oh, I don't hang out with too many people. That's why.
I mean, you're like,
I have downtime. My downtime involves sitting down to watch a movie. Okay, so as a way to relax, I do like smoking. So I'll smoke to just like chill out, right?
Smoke marijuana, we're talking.
Because I have like a ton of energy, right? So I'm like a huge cannabis advocate. So, but I don't get a chance to do that too often because I'm busy. So, you know, like obviously I'm not going to be smoking because I'm running a company and I've got 3,000 things. So whenever, like, on one night, whenever a month or something, whenever I have time, I really enjoy it because it gives a chance for my brain to just like calm down.
Right.
But I also take time to work out. That's really a way for me to like, to release. But I'm not a person, like I was on the couch for like 4 days working because I had the flu. So I was like working through the fever, but that was like my body literally like running into the ground.
So there must be a lot of reward in this for you. Let's talk about some of the things that you've done, like that have really made you feel rewarded. I mean, if you weren't being rewarded for all the activities that you're pursuing, you probably wouldn't keep doing them, right? I mean, if they weren't satisfying.
Yes, I think reward is a concept that is different to other people, right? Some people look for financial rewards. Some other people look for...
I'm talking emotional
rewards. Emotional rewards, right? Like for me, it's definitely not financial reward. It's like as a woman who's just been like selling her company and selling all this other stuff, like I want to be very clear that I still fund all my projects through working for advertising agencies. Like I have not been able to get my projects fully funded. Like, hello, Oprah. Hello, Ellen. Hello, female investors that want to invest a bunch of money and have a new deck coming.
But you're capable of earning, getting paid a good amount of money.
I'm very lucky, right?
It's not luck. Let's not say it's luck. Well, it's talent and hard work.
It's talent and hard work, but it's also luck because you have to be given the opportunity to be put in that space. Because I got to leave Russia, right? I'm lucky because I had a good teacher who taught me English.
Are we still going to be friends after this?
Yes. And you know, I'm lucky because I went to a college and I created my own major, which I realized, holy crap, like the advertising world does not recognize my major. So when I came into New York, I was interviewing at BBDO he was like, I was like, hey, here's my thesis. Like, let's create PR and grassroots advertising and let's do good for companies and turn that into advertising. And he was like, but can you write a jingle? And I was like, yes, of course. But this is like a bigger idea. So I'm very lucky that I've been given these opportunities. But again, as a woman, I constantly have to fight for my wages, right? Like I'm constantly going into an ad agency and I'm like, and they're like, hi, can we hire you to do this, 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 and like, and work? And I'm like, yes. And this is my fee. And it's a lot lower than a lot of other men in my position charge. And they're like, well, can we pay you less? And you're like, no. But then they're like, well, we don't have a budget. So you end up negotiating somewhere. Like, so I'm always negotiating, right, as a woman. And then there are just always ways that you are like, wait, but they want me to work a 50-hour week, but then they're not going to pay me time and a half. And how is this legal? Like, let's just have a conversation of like, how is this legal? How are ad agencies getting away?
So you're not afraid to confront people and ask them and you know, to like say, hey, what the hell are you doing?
Well, I've learned that when I confront, I have to be ready for, you know, the end.
Yeah, right. It's a risk.
It's a risk.
So how does that work for you?
You know, you just have to trust.
I mean, you know, I imagine that most of the time it's fairly, you know, does it work out mostly in your favor? I mean,
No, it doesn't. I've had a bunch of projects where I'm like, okay, they're not calling me back again. That's fine, whatever, because I just won't be a slave.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that like, okay, you have me working 60, 70 hour weeks. That's fine. But like, if I'm doing this for 3 months straight and my eye is twitching, I need a few days off. And like, if you're not going to give me a few days off, like obviously I'm going to leave because my health is more important.
Mm-hmm.
And I also am trying to align my values with the people and the companies that have similar views that like, hey, don't abuse workers.
Mm-hmm.
Be nice to mm-hmm. people. Mm-hmm. Be considerate. Say thank you. You know,
right. So you're grounded in the sense that you're going to negotiate the way that you need, and you get plenty of work, obviously. So
no, it's still hard. I still have to work. I still have to hustle.
But you're more interested in being in like maintaining your boundaries and your control and all that instead of let the chips fall where they may. Right.
Well, I have a career, right? And I try to navigate it. And my goal is to always get the best work that I can and also be able to work on the projects that align with my values. Like,
mm-hmm.
I love working on projects that promote women and diversity. So I would love to work, you know, with more companies that are streamlined to do that, where I can, you know, work with mm-hmm. them in my creative agency, where
mm-hmm.
we have a larger client that we help promote these wonderful stories.
Mm-hmm.
You can check us out at dreamnation.com,
.io/creativeagency. So what let's talk, so let's find out what's going on in your life right now. What are you working on right now?
Oh gosh, what am I working on right now? I have a project that I'm working on that I can't talk about. I have like 3,000 NDNAs. So I'm like, well, all the things I really can't talk about.
Oh, so you can't talk about all your stuff.
I can't talk about all my stuff.
Because you've signed all these agreements. Yeah. It's all in the works.
It's all in the works. So I work for like a lot of like Fortune mm-hmm. 500 companies. Mm-hmm. So I can't talk about, the only thing I can really talk about is Dream Nation. So I guess I'll just talk about Dream Nation itself. So what I have is a podcast, which you can check out on iTunes and Spotify mm-hmm. under Dream Nation Love, because there's a love underneath everything and at the end of everything. So it's on Instagram as well and Facebook and Twitter and all the social channels. So it's a podcast, but then I also have my creative agency. So there, I work with different clients, helping them promote women and diversity.
Mm-hmm.
We've done, a few years ago, I actually did a few concepts for the Women's March. They called me like 5 days before they launched. Then they were like, can you redesign a bunch of images on our website? And I was like, sure. And then I was like, wait, you have no acquisition funnel on here. Like, wait, you're just capturing bus data, but you don't have anything mm-hmm. to log in emails. Like, here's what you should be doing on your website. Mm-hmm. So I sent that to them and they were like, oh, we just wanted pictures. And I'm like, oh, I know. But like as an agency, this is what I do.
Mm-hmm.
I work in like acquisition funnels mm-hmm. and I can like, you know, it's more than
so
just
pictures.
So
you really understand like the technology and how the thing works.
I understand technology. I understand community building and I understand aggregation and acquisition funnels and business strategy.
Mm-hmm. Whatever.
Whatever that is, right? So, like, I'm really, really good at that. And the monetization. So I have my creative agency. And right now what I'm working on is a book. I'm working on a book. We're actually working on it since fourth grade. When I immigrated, mm-hmm. I couldn't talk to anyone. So I ended up journaling a lot. And that's where, like, this journal that I've had for years and mm-hmm. many, many different notepads mm-hmm. has lived. And it's kind of a cross between like a David Sedaris story and maybe like Girl Boss. I don't know, maybe mm-hmm. a little bit Mark Twain. Mm-hmm. It's funny. So I'm working on a proposal for it. It's taken me a lot longer than I know. And then I'm also turning the podcast hopefully into a talk show. So I'd love to be like an Ellen or kind of like an Oprah, but for like a modern day age where I think mm-hmm. we can have a lot of conversations about what people are passionate about. You know, mm-hmm. and just because I'm focused on women and diversity doesn't mean I can't have men on a show because, you know, inclusion is inclusion. Mm-hmm. And I like to talk about inclusion. And one day I'd like to have my own network like Oprah.
So there you go.
And a tech platform and creating mm-hmm. content and film.
You're the person to do it, for
hope
sure.
So we have a little team, so we're working on it.
So do you have any thoughts or advice for what kind of stuff, what kind of mistakes do women make? You know, like, I'll just talk about, like, what would advice maybe you should give? I mean, I'm not working in advertising anymore, but I always felt really kind of vulnerable. And I felt that I didn't have a lot of power and I didn't know how to fight that, you know. But do you see like sometimes women are evaluated differently, aren't they?
I think so. And I think when you find yourself in those positions, if you can find a way out and create your own power, right? Nobody's going to give you power. You have to take it. And in order to take that power, you have to create your own power. And that power comes from community, right? And it comes from alliances and it comes from friends. So the only way that women can control their lives is through money, right? Which is the biggest thing, which is, oh, can I leave my job? I don't have the money to do that. Well, okay, you can't leave your job, but maybe you can like work on your side project at night. 15 minutes throughout mm-hmm. the year, every day adds mm-hmm. up, right? Like, what can you do to move yourself into a position of power?
Yeah, and it does have, I mean, I agree. Like, it does have a lot to do with financial security, doesn't it?
Everything has to do with financial security. I think yeah. It comes back to women. Women get stuck in horrible relationships because they don't have financial security.
Right, and they get it from the guy.
And sometimes, you know, it's so tricky. Because sometimes you go into a relationship and like the husband makes more money. So then you are like, okay, well, I guess I'll raise the kids. But then like in the long run, you end up losing money. So you're like, well, in the long run, mm-hmm. I'm losing out on like mm-hmm. social security and all this other stuff. And it's very complicated. Like one day I actually hope to like give a talk on a woman in economics at the Lunda School of Economics.
Wow.
So
yeah.
like that's a project like 10 years down the road. I'd love to do it.
I think it's really true though, because I'm, remember from working in advertising as an art director, like I always felt vulnerable because I didn't have money coming in from anywhere. And, you know, it was really hard to feel secure because people get fired all the time, whatever. And I used to sort of like look at the men and I'd look at the married women and they were a lot more comfortable at work because they didn't ever really have to worry about like just being on their own or taking care of themselves.
Well, they have other things that they stress out about, right? Because once you have a family, there are like more things. It's kind of like, you know, like.
But you're not on your own.
You're not on your own, but there are other problems, right? Because then you have kids and then you have a mortgage and then you have all this other stuff that just compounds. And then the pressure comes when, oh my gosh, I'm not in the right relationship, but I can't get out because I've surrounded myself with stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that's another really, really huge problem. But I think what women can really do is really, really, really listen to that little voice inside of them. Like that mm-hmm. little voice that is your fight or flight instinct that just goes, I want to get the hell out of here. And if the hell out of here is that job or that marriage, whatever, listen to that voice, but like plan and go, what is my next step, right? Like I was married for 11 years and like I did not want to leave that relationship. I was in love with that person and mm-hmm. we were in love with each other, but it wasn't working. So we're like, oh my gosh, this isn't working. And like, he really wanted to have kids and he was 14 years older. So
14.
And mm-hmm. I was like, well, I just, you know, I thought I was ready, but I'm not. And like, I don't want to keep on telling you, I don't want to keep on giving you false promises. And I want you to have your happiness. And I wanted him to be so happy. So I was like, okay, I want you to be happy. Like you want to break up? Like, let's do this. Because I care about him and I want him to be happy and a family will make him happy. And
so you broke up with him because he wanted a family.
Well,
or
among
that
other
was
things,
a big part of it.
Yeah. You know, just like being more present, being more of a woman, like just he wanted somebody who can fill that role because that's what he needed.
Right.
Which is perfectly fine. You know, like, and we had a great time and we love each other and we had like an amazing time. But I think relationships change. And that's the biggest thing that people don't realize, that over time, relationships change. So even though you might be someone for 10 years, the next 10 years might be different.
Mm-hmm.
So it just depends on how both of you are aligned and the timing. Mm-hmm. It's all timing, right?
So you realize that at some point and then you realize that wasn't going to work. So yeah. That must have been hard to get out of because you weren't like, I hate this person.
It's really hard, right?
Yeah.
It's really
hard. But you're glad you did?
Yeah, I'm glad. Yeah, I'm very glad.
Do you think you're ever going to want to have children?
Oh, I want babies like right now.
You do?
Yeah, I do. I want to like get pregnant like literally this year.
Why did you not feel that? Like, see, I mean, I never wanted to have kids and I have no regrets about that. I mean, I've got a great stepson. I'm just lucky that that came along in my life. But nevertheless, like, how did you change your mind so radically about wanting to have kids?
You know what? I think I didn't want to have kids because I didn't feel like I was in control of my life in that relationship. And I think it was because this is such an interesting conversation.
That particular
conversation,
relationship.
That yeah.
And I think control, I just want to say, is like a huge overriding. You know that, right?
Yeah. You know what's really interesting? I've never thought about these things. So it's really interesting that you're having me like reflect on everything, which is like a really nice closure loop for like the last 5 years. Because, you know, I was freelancing and I was so busy with my career and everything else, but I wasn't doing exactly what I wanted, which was making room for me to do the stuff that I wanted to because he expected me to spend more time with him. But now I'm in a place where like I can just exist and I can be me and I have a partner that recognizes me for me and they're creating the space for me to be me, knowing that they'll be them and we can coexist together and we can have this experience and like together we want to build something, but we also acknowledge each other's full being. Right? So he's like, I know you're going to be busy. I know you're going to be like, that's totally fine. Like, I fully support it and I love it. And like, I don't want you to change.
So you feel safe having a child. You might feel you're more like this relationship or whatever it might or whatever it might.
This relationship has more space for me to be myself, which means I can bring more of myself to the child. Does that make sense?
Yes.
As opposed to the previous relationship where I was expected to be like a really great mother and like...
Well, much older man.
Right?
Too.
So I was not ready to play that role because that would mean denying a part of myself. Whoa, how deep is that, right?
Right. No, that's great. And, you know, I mean, that's a really good lesson I'm learning here. We're all learning. I think that's a really hard being. I think that's a really hard thing to achieve what you're talking about. And it does take a lot of courage to do that. And it's I think that's, you know, impressive.
I will say that, you know, I've had a lot of relationships. I'm like the Elizabeth Taylor. You know, I've dated a lot of men in my lifetime. I've lived with a few men. Right. And I always found the men trying to suppress me in some way.
Yeah.
Right?
I get
like,
that.
I had this douchebag of a boyfriend a few years ago after I broke up, who's a friend. Sorry, douchebag. I called you a douchebag. You're a brilliant writer, but you're a douchebag. And I remember we were hanging out one day and we were talking and he was like, don't you want to be the wife of a brilliant writer?
Hilarious.
And I just said, I am a brilliant writer and I can also be a great wife to a brilliant writer. And I'm fully myself.
That's so fucked up.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
But like, I finally found a person who just lets me be me. And who's like, I want you to succeed, baby. Just go.
Yeah, it is.
Just
it is,
go.
It is, you know, I mean, that's what I am surprised about, how there's so much of that still going on where women, even younger women who sublimate who they are to men, like our society is so defined, you know, it's just like we're brainwashed, folks.
Lisa, but it's so easy, right? Like I go into domestic mode all the time. I'm like, oh, let me clean this up, let me do this, but I'm like, what am I doing? Like everybody's equal. Like women go into like mother mode all the time.
Yes. You know what? We're gonna have to end this at least for now. But I want to thank you so much for being here. What a great session this is. And I've gotten so much out of it. And I want to thank you all for listening. It's Instagram is Dr. Lisa Levy, SP. Thanks for listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. Please stick around. We've got a great afternoon planned. So good. We've got Lost and Marie.